Ja, so Podcasts machen voll Bock, ey.
Hallo und willkommen zur 29. Folge von Open Court, dem Podcast des FC Bayern Basketball, powered by BayWa. Heute geht es um Basketball und Musik. Denn übermorgen, am Mittwochabend, heißt es zum fünften Mal Music meets Basketball im Audi Dome. Wie schon bei Bowser oder Sido gibt es auch dieses Mal ein Konzert in der Halbzeit und auch nach dem Spiel. Mit wem? Schön, dass ihr fragt. Mit niemand anderem als Jan Delay und Didi Ladies und DJ Matt. Es gibt noch Tickets, die Halle darf endlich wieder voll werden. Kommt vorbei, wenn es gegen den MBC geht. Ob unser heutiger Gast Jan Delay kennt? Das ist eher unwahrscheinlich. Aber Musik spielt in seinem Leben neben Basketball und der Familie ebenfalls eine große Rolle. Als Kind spielte er 7 Jahre Geige. Heute ist er Miteigentümer einer Agentur, die Musiker wie Bia, Aziz The Sheik, Lil Rich oder Jazz Cartier managt. Wie er mit Musik aufgewachsen ist, wie eng Musik und Basketball, speziell in den USA, miteinander verbunden sind, warum er lange glaubte, immer nur Zweiter zu werden, wie es war, mit Sergio Llull, Vasilis Spanoulis sowie Luka Doncic zu spielen und was er mit dem Business nach seiner Laufbahn vorhat, das bereden wir heute in Open Court mit dem weitgereisten Center-Routinier der Bayern Basketballer, Othello Hunter. And there he is, the man, the myth, the legend, the EuroLeague legend, Othello Hunter. Man, thanks for taking the time, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We sit down today because we have this thing up with the music in the Audi Dome, music meets basketball. And today we want to talk about your career, which is a long career, and your fable for music later on, which is obviously a big part in your life. So let's just start at the beginning. I mean, you grew up in North Carolina. Obviously, that's a state that has a lot of affinity for basketball. When did it start for you? When did you fall in love with the game?
But to be honest, like, I played football growing up. You know, I loved to play football. And there was a moment in time when my mom was just like, no more football. This is getting too crazy out here. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, and, you know, I always played in the neighborhood basketball, but I never took it seriously. You know, I just kind of played, went on with my life, you know, until I got in high school. I'll say it was my junior year. The coach comes up to me and says, hey, you need to get your grades up. I was like, what are you talking about? I need to get my grades up. He's like, I want you to try for the basketball team. Me being who I am, I'm like, basketball is not going to do nothing for me. It's not going to feed my family, you know?
Yeah.
Those are my exact words. And, you know, a lot of my friends put in the basketball team, and it started from there that summer. I just loved it at that point.
Looking at you playing basketball now, I can see the football player. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, you can say that.
Did you take the physical aspects of American football into your basketball career early on?
Yeah, I always had a knack for like running fast. That was my whole thing, running down the court fast, you know, trying to get office rebounds. I felt like defensive rebounds, this is me. They don't count. For some reason, I always feel like they didn't count because, you know, they don't amount to, sometimes I feel like they didn't amount to a score or kick out to your teammate for open shot sometimes, you know. So, yeah, I use football. It's like swim move actions. You always see me do a swim move.
Oh, okay.
I learned that from football and from my former coach, Tim, that was in Maccabi.
See, I played high school basketball for a year, and don't laugh, I played in Mississippi. That's where everybody laughs when they hear that. But I remember it was always like the worst day of the week when we played a team which had like the football players playing as well, because like you said, we're doing the swim moves, they're rough. Did guys tell you back then, man, you got to slow down, man, this is basketball. Don't come in here with the football stuff.
No. Actually, no. It was more like, I would say one time, and it was my friend we're trying out at that time. Kind of already knew I was on the team, but we still had to have the tryouts. And me and him were doing this run, and we had to run everybody, and we bumped into each other, and we got so pissed because we had to make the time, and we felt like if we wouldn't have made the time, we wouldn't have made the team. Yeah. He's like, yo, you got to slow down, bro. You got to calm down. Like, this isn't a competition. I was like, yeah, you're right.
your career started off, well, I think we have to explain this for people in Europe. You obviously played at the Ohio State University, but only for 2 years because you played in junior college before that. Can you please explain, you know, to the listeners out there what a junior college is?
It's pretty much like a community college. You know, like I said, my basketball started late. You know, I had a job and everything. I wasn't thinking about basketball. I wasn't thinking about any kind of sports. I figured I had a job. I was making good what I thought was good money at the time. So I was just, you know, living my life. And then my coach was like, hey, there's a guy in Florida that wants to check you out. And I went down there and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And from that point on, I took basketball pretty serious. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you go there to get your grades up, make sure you have everything ready for a big time college, or for the kids who, like me, never really had that exposure in high school, you know, from playing 1 year, that everybody can see who you are and recognize you. So that was one of those things.
What was the job you had during high school?
I actually worked at a place called Bilo. It was a grocery store.
Okay.
You know, so I was like cash register, bag boy. I did everything. We need to clean up at the end of the night. We'll do that. So yeah, I did all that stuff.
So if somebody like spilled some milk that was clean up on aisle 9, they called you.
Me or someone else. Yeah. A couple of us. Yes, that's exactly it. So, can you imagine me right now?
what was so shocking for you when you went down there to Florida? Was it the facilities or just the way basketball was taught there?
The weather.
The weather, okay.
The weather. Palm trees. I've never seen palm trees. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And the guys and coaches, it was just like, it was like the perfect fit for me. You know, you had a coach who actually, you know, took care of us, you know, treated us like his own, knowing I was leaving family, didn't know anything about this whole basketball thing. So it was all that.
So a community college is for 2 years. And then obviously, like you did, you can go on to play in a major NCAA or NCAA Division I, II, III college, wherever. You weren't really recruited out of high school. Did that change when you finished your community college?
Yeah. I was ranked pretty high, I'll say one or two, you know, in the nation. In Florida, I would say Florida was ranked pretty high. And at first I was like, man, where are all these schools? Like, I feel like I'm putting in the work, but I'm getting schools I've never heard of in my life. It's like, I must not be doing something right. You know, my junior college coach was like, hey, just keep running the floor, keep doing what you're doing. They'll come. And next thing you know, there's this old guy. I won't say old, Coach Montessori, but this guy is up in the stands, which I didn't know. And he actually came to see my other friend. And I didn't know. No one know. Coach didn't tell me. And, you know, I'm running and he was like, okay, we want this guy. I don't know who this guy, but I want this guy over this guy. You know, and that's how it all happened, man. You know, I go from Ohio State, Colorado, El Paso. There's a point in Oklahoma, Miami. They all start coming in, you know, and I think I already had my heart set on where I was going to go at that point.
And you were part of a pretty, pretty nice recruiting class, I would say. What was it called? The Matter 5, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, the Fat 5.
Come on, you can't. The Thad Five. You can't do us like that, man.
It was you. It was Greg Oden. It was Mike Conley. Who else was in it?
Daquan Cook and Dave Lighty.
All right, yeah. Was that something that really drew you to Ohio State, that you were able to play with these guys?
100%. 100%. Because, you know, in Florida, I was in a club a little bit, and I seen Florida. Al Horford, you know, Joe Kim, Matt Walsh and all them. And, you know, I met those guys and I was like, man, this is a talented team right here, you know? And then when my recruiting came up and I see all these guys, I said, you can quote me. I was like, man, we can go to the national title. We can win all this stuff. And the guy was like, do you really think so? A bunch of young guys?
Yeah.
That's what the reporter said. And I was like, yeah. I said, we have a talented group, man. Like, you haven't seen a guy like Greg in years.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, everyone. And look what happened. We didn't win it, but hey, that was a good one.
And you played the guys from Florida in the finals.
Yeah, we played them twice.
Twice, actually, yeah.
They beat us twice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great team. I mean, obviously, you guys were a great team, but going against up against that Florida team, especially for you, I mean, obviously, you didn't play that much in the final, but that was just one of the greatest college teams of all time Florida had.
Yeah, it was special, I would say. You know, you look at those guys, and I can see it every day, to be honest with you. I see that freaking orange, blue, white confetti come down. I see the guys' faces, and I'm just like, oh. So, yeah, I see it all the time.
It must have been tough for you guys because, I mean, obviously Greg and Mike left after 1 year, and that was pretty much a done deal that they would leave. How was that? Maybe you remember, how was it feeling that whole year? Did you know, okay, we have this one shot and that's it? Or did you think otherwise?
No, to be honest with you, everyone knew kind of Greg would leave. Mm. Everyone knew that. You know, everyone knew that Daquan Cook was, you know, he was out too.
Yeah.
You kind of just knew that, you know, and, you know, that was his goal. His dream was to leave. And in the back of my mind, my goal was to leave too. You know, if things would have panned out how I wanted them to, you know, starting and winning, you know, with that group, I was planning to leave too, no matter what. I didn't want to stay. I wasn't going to stay, you know, but Mike was very surprising because he did not know that he was so hot. He did not know he could be the fourth pick. He didn't know that scouts was like really looking at him to literally come out and leave, you know? And I remember conversations, we're all talking and it was like, hey man, like, well, this guy could be number four. And we're like, oh, you have to leave, you know? Yeah. Like guys, we all just talking like, yo, you gotta leave, you can't stay, yeah. You know? But he didn't really come to his own, I feel like, until we played Wisconsin at home, and that's where you're like number one in AP poll and they're like number one in coaches poll. So it was like the battle of the Titans at that point, you know, but that's where he really showed like, man, I'm here, you know, no one can stop him. He was giving me everything, left hand, right hand, jump shots, floaters, assists. It was crazy.
Yeah, and he's obviously still doing that. I mean, he's still going strong.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did you, I mean, this is just totally random now, but his father, there's this one clip on YouTube. I don't know if you ever seen it. Like in the 80s, they had these slam dunk contests with like celebrities and his dad was in it. He was just killing it. I'm just wondering, I mean, back in the day, did he go to the gym or come to the gym and show you guys how it's done? Had he still springs for legs?
Is that no? We met him a couple of times. He didn't come in here and do any of those windmill dunks, but I definitely seen that video and I actually sent it to him on Twitter. Man, I see where you got all that after this dunk. So that was funny. So, it's in your blood for sure.
So obviously we have to talk about Greg, man. This is just such a sports tragic story. I mean, there's a lot of tragic stuff going on in the world, but man, the way his career fell apart with all the injuries. Are you still in touch with him? Do you know what he's doing right now?
I haven't talked to Greg in some time, but I know he's at Columbus. He's on the coaching staff.
Okay.
You know, I see him. I know he's married, has kids, you know, so he's doing well. You know, I think at first he took it pretty hard because, you know, people are calling him a bust and all this, which to this day, I'll back up and say he's not. You know, you can't control what God hasn't planned. That's just me. Like, knee injuries happen. It happened. And, you know, and now look, he's enjoying his life, not playing basketball, but he's still a part of it. So that's pretty big, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's one thing you can't control if you get hurt or not. It's just so unfortunate because, obviously, like I said, he was this defensive force. I mean, nobody had ever had seen for years. It was just crazy the way he was playing back then.
Yeah, it was insane. Like, the stuff he used to do in practice, I used to be, like, there was times we were all just sit. And because this is time, I was a starting five, and he broke his wrist, his right hand.
Yeah.
So he was shooting everything with his left. And I was just like, his free throws with the left hand is way better than free throws with the right hand at this point. And we were supposed to sit there, and him and another guy, I won't say his name, but they're on the sideline and they're playing. Greg's coming back and they're playing 1-on-1. So the whole team's playing. And all of a sudden, we just stopped. They didn't know we stopped, but we stopped and we're just watching them and they're playing. And all of a sudden, you just see Greg. He's in the post trying to, you know, shimmy left and right. And he just jumps, turns around, dunks on this guy so bad, guy falls. And we all kind of just looked and was like, oh, people are going to be in trouble once he gets on the floor because I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how he was all year.
Yeah, I remember that season. I watched a lot of Ohio State back then. It was just incredible. And just so unfortunate that he comes out the same year as Kevin Durant comes out, and these two are forever linked now. It's just let's talk about you. Let's get back to you. You play another year with guys like Evan Turner, and then obviously you're a senior. It's time for you to go to the NBA. You don't get drafted, but you make it. How was that process like? You know, being undrafted and then making the roster for the Atlanta Hawks?
To be honest, you know, a part of me felt like I should have been drafted or should have been drafted to Charlotte. I was hoping I could go to Charlotte because it's home. But, I mean, I set my expectations pretty high, you know? And I can remember the night I'm all at my house. I had my friends over, you know, and just watching the draft, and didn't get drafted, and I just walk outside, look at the stars, you know, just look outside, and I get a phone call immediately. And it's, at the time, it's the Cavs, and they wanted me to do, like, a mini camp. And I'm like, nah, I got something else. You know, in my mind, I'm like, I'm not doing this. You know, take a deep breath, get my mind ready, go back to the gym and start working out. I'm not going to a mini camp right this second, you know? And that's what I did. That night I left, went to the gym, you know, worked out. Next day worked out, agent calls. And he's like, hey, you know, Charlotte's interested in Summer League and Atlanta. But Atlanta's doing Utah, Charlotte's doing Vegas. And I was like, okay, I'll do both. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, Charlotte had Larry Brown, who I love to death, you know, so they had him. And funny note is me and Cal Hines started on that team at the same time. Our career started right then and there. So literally, I was like, okay, do Charlotte. I'm doing Charlotte. Tell Larry Brown, hey, I got to go to Atlanta. He's like, I know. This used to be my former assistant coach. You know, I put in a good word for you. You know, go out there, have fun and play. He said, you're going to make the team. That's exactly what he told me. You're going to make the team. I was like, okay, well, I got to prove myself. So thank you for believing in me. Next thing you know, I play good and signed to a 2-year.
I mean, that must be kind of like a roller coaster, right? I mean, you expect to get drafted, then it doesn't happen, and you get these calls, and then you make the team. Describe what that's like. I mean, I guess you have to really, you know, focus and kind of not let maybe the disappointment get you down, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't, because I feel like once you let it get you down, you're done. You know, but you always got to know that, hey, nobody controls your fate but you. You know, so that's why I try to, at that time, I was like, just get into the gym and keep working. There's something that they didn't see in you, you know, so go back to the gym, work out. So that was just my mindset. Sometimes it's like, for me, it's like, I'm very, very frustrated. I'll go off to the gym. I'll have to go somewhere by myself, shoot by myself, just somewhere by myself to get away from people to clear my mind, or just scream, let it out. You know what I mean? Like, and just reset, go. But at that time, when you're young, yeah, because I wouldn't say I was frustrated, because when I grew up, I didn't grow up wanting to be in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I didn't. It was just something that I eventually started to love. And then once I started to, then I was like, oh, I can play in the NBA. Oh man. Yeah, for sure. Exactly like that. That's exactly. Oh, I can play. This should be fun. This should be good. You know? And when I got there, it was amazing. You know, different world.
Obviously your NBA dreams didn't work out. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't sit here and speak, but,
won't cut you off. It did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, you played for like two seasons, right?
It did. So in my mind, it's like my dream came true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When I started to believe in it, it came true. It didn't matter if I was there long, which I had this feeling I wasn't going to be there long.
Yeah.
And I tell the guys the story all the time. It was just one of those days. It was, we had a financial meeting and I was talking about, you know, they're teaching us about finance and this and this. Some goes inside of me. It was like, hey, you're not going to be here long. You know, I feel like I wasn't living the right life, you know, just partying too much, like wasn't taking it so serious. But even though I feel like when I came to work, I was serious. I would always work out, go to the gym by myself at night, try to work out, get shots, do all those things. But I felt like I had a different path. That was just me. I felt like the NBA wasn't the path that God chosen for me. So,
oh, that's very interesting because, you know, obviously a lot of players who don't make it, who like on the fringe, and then maybe they don't find this one team that falls in love with them, because that's what I was saying. Like there's so many players who are NBA players who are in Europe, and if the right team, and they would have seen them at the right time, they would be in the NBA, had a long career. But, you know, I think a lot of people feel a lot of bitterness maybe when it doesn't work out, and they have to go to Europe and they have to go to different teams. But from what you are telling me, I feel like you don't feel any bitterness at all.
No, none at all. You know, like I'm quick to tell the young guys, hey man, if the NBA is your dream, go for it. Mm. If you can go for it, go for it. You know, not everybody's path is the same. You know, for me, I've never been on one team for more than 2 years. Why is that? Because I like experiencing different cultures. I like to be that guy that can move around and adjust to a different environment. Like, I love the challenge. So that's just me.
And I mean, you had quite a challenge there early on in your European career. I mean, you just said, all right, you wanted to have new experiences, but you went to Greece first, I think. Did you question maybe after a while if there was a right path for you, or did you just take it all in?
Man, I questioned immediately because no one told me not to sleep during the day when I first got there. So I was still on state time. Yeah. So I'll go to sleep and they're like, you should stay up. Like 3 days later, then they tell me, oh, you should probably stay up. I'm like, well, I'm watching Greek cartoons in the middle of the night and I don't know what they're saying, but I'm focused. I was like, this is not what I signed up for. Like just the whole breakfast, how in the hotel, how it was totally different. You know, and then me not knowing that they spoke English and acting a fool, I would say, when it was time to order some food. And the guy's looking at me and in his mind, he's like, this guy's crazy. Because there was like a chicken and fry place. And I was just like, Timo was like, yeah, you should go down here. They're really good. I was like, okay, cool. So one day I decided to go. So I go and I was like, yeah, can I get some chicken and fries? Like, he's looking at me with this look and it's just so funny. I was like, you know, like chicken. I started moving like, oh my goodness. So I started moving like, and he just goes, oh, you want chicken and fries? And I was like, oh my goodness. I said, I'm so sorry. So funny.
So obviously, you know, you're a basketball worker. You know, that's what you do. Like you said, you run fast, you jump high, you hustle, you rebound. But usually, when a team in Europe gets a foreigner, they want a star. They want a superstar, somebody who does everything for them. Mm-hmm. Was that something that was maybe early on, well, tough for you to accept that new role, or did the teams that got you knew what they were getting as a basketball player?
I think that role, I wouldn't say it was tough, but first year in the Seahawks, my whole job was just to pretty much keep the team in the first division. And I feel like I did that, you know. And then when I ended up going to Sastry, that's when it was a whole, like, me and coach butted heads, you know. He didn't like me. He told me, he was like, you know what, when you first got here, I didn't like you. I was like, I didn't like you either. But the whole thing was my game. It was, you know, I could run the floor because I wasn't shooting threes. Yeah. And he wanted me to shoot I'm not going to shoot threes. Like, at that point in time, my career, I was like, I'm not going to shoot threes, bro. Like, that's not me. I love to screen roll. I love back to the basket. I love facing up. Like, I love that game. You know, I'm coming from that era of, like, you're going against Shaq, and how are you going to get a bucket? You know, like, these guys, Josh Smith, like, I got to play tough. Like, I'm not, I didn't want to do the whole finesse game, you know? Mm. And then eventually, you know, my game mixed with what he wanted, and it was perfect. So at first, it was hard. It was hard, for sure.
And the funny thing is, you know, looking at your career, then you started shooting threes in China. I mean, how did that come about?
Because I always could shoot threes. Like, okay. I always feel like I could shoot. But I tell everybody, because when I'm home and I play all these guys, I'm a three man. I shoot the ball. I never touch the paint.
Okay.
Like, I never touch the paint. I never screen roll. I'm shooting. Summertime, it's all shooting. It's all. So guys were like, dude, you play the five? I was like, yeah, that's what they paid me to do. They paid me screen and roll. That's what they want. That's what I give them. If they want something else, I'll do that. But this is what I do here, you know? And they're like, wow, you really can adjust your game to certain situations. So yeah, but China was more like, I say NBA, it was more like free.
Yeah, it was a lot of up and down, right?
Literally,
yeah.
It was literally like free. Three games a week. Coach is like, hey, I need you to get a lot of shots. And I'm like, okay, cool.
So, I mean, to me, this is just so mind-blowing that you start in Greece, which is obviously a crazy league. We can talk about Olympiacos later. Then you go to Italy. Then you go to China. Then you play in Mariupol, which is obviously, unfortunately, in the news right now. And then you go to the ACB. And it's just like these totally different experiences. How did you even know in what country you were in at a certain point?
It's so funny because I think the whole Mariupol was the strangest for me. That was the toughest time for me, you know, in the sense of, one, I didn't want to go to China. I really wanted to stay in Sassari.
Yeah.
But, you know, things happened eternally that I couldn't control. I felt that devalued. So I left, and then they offered me what I wanted. It was too late. Then I go to China. China was an experience in itself. It was amazing. And then I was home for maybe 2 weeks, and my agent said, do you want to continue playing? I'm like, yeah, why not? Me and my girlfriend at the time, we pack up, we go, and it's like, whoa, this is different. Mm-hmm. I'm not used to the slush and the snow. I'm not used to the cold, how it is. People just seemed at the time cold. You know, I wasn't used to that. I was just like, I'm a more happy-go-lucky guy. Hey, how you guys doing? And people were looking at me like, who's this guy? You know?
Okay.
So that was kind of strange. And then ACB, I always heard that the ACB was the best league. And I was like, I want to play in the best league, period. If I'm here in Europe, I want to play on the best. And that happened. And that was just, it was fun. It was a good experience, I would say, in itself, playing for via the league. So,
and your girlfriend always came with you to all the different countries?
Well, she's my wife now, but she started in China.
Okay.
So her first experience was China. She go to China, then Mariupol.
It's rough. It's a rough start. But yes. I mean, very able to really experience each country, or very just the kind of guy that just maybe just went to practice, stayed in the hotel, you know, did the games, or did you really embrace it and kind of, you know, kind of try to experience each country and each culture?
Yeah, didn't experience Ukraine. I wish I would experience more of China. That's one regret I have, not seeing like the Great Wall and things like that. But my wife at the time, we had some friends. She met some friends and took her out, hang out. But we experienced Hong Kong. We took a little trip, so we experienced that. But I really wish I experienced like the heart of China. You know, that's the only thing I regret. But every other place I've been, I experienced it at this point.
I reckon, I mean, you talked about, you know, in Greece, you know, just kind of like, you know, not being able to order food or whatever. I mean, in China, it must have been a totally different ball game. Or did you have I don't know, some guy who was taking care of you that you got around in China?
Yeah, we had a translator. Mm-hmm. So I will call him or he'll come with us. I could just order things by myself at that point. You know, like I wasn't speaking Chinese, but I could get by if I needed to, you know. The translator app definitely helped a lot.
Yeah. And after that, it kind of starts to fall into place for you, I feel, in your career. I mean, you stay a year in Siena, then Olympiacos, Real Madrid, CSKA Moscow. These are really the powerhouses, you know, in the EuroLeague. Did you feel that change yourself? That you had a different, you know, status all of a sudden in the EuroLeague?
Yeah, I felt that all changed Siena. I would say because in Siena, I mean, we were really fighting to win, and we knew we were EuroLeague, but at that time, Siena wasn't the same Siena, you know. And we're playing all these teams like Olympiacos, and I remember playing Olympiacos, and I'm like, oh, I remember them. I have to go at them. We got to win this game or whatever, which we didn't win, but it was just like, that was a turning point for me. Mm-hmm. My mindset was like, okay, you're in the EuroLeague, now it's time to stay in the EuroLeague. You know, like you want to be among the greats or the best in here. So, yeah.
And then you went to Olympiacos, so back to Greece. Mm-hmm. And obviously everybody knows these videos of like the fans when Panathinaikos plays Olympiacos. I see you smiling already. There's got to be a story there that you experienced during one of these games.
Well, there's a whole lot of story. Okay. I'll tell you the story because this is the one that sticks up more than anything. It's at the time we had Barjokas. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the one who recruited me to come to Olympiacos. So we had Barjokas and we're playing Panna in the cup. But it's to get to the cup. You know, you have like that first round. We matched it with Panna in the first round. So it's at the time, I'm mistaken, I remember the subs he made. He took out me, Oliver Lafayette, and Kostas Lucas. Mm-hmm. He took us out the last 3 minutes of the game. We're winning. Now all of a sudden, we're losing. He didn't put us back in. We're losing, and we lost to Panna on a full court transition dunk. Unheard of. I mean, ball through the rim, it was the perfect. It couldn't. It was the perfect shot. And I'm just sitting here like, did we just lose like that? So we're kind of upset. I'm pissed. So we're leaving. And at this time, Milan Tomic is like the, I don't want to say he's like a GM, but was he the GM? I think he was the GM at the time. And he's on the bus and he was like, hey, I'm letting you guys know there's a couple of fans at the gym. They're upset. I'm like, what are fans in the gym upset? We're upset too. I don't have time to see fans and be upset. Like, who cares, bro? I'm already mad. I don't need to see no one. Well, Brent Petway didn't tell me to park my car outside the way, you know, like outside like the little tunnel area. And I see Brent, you know, he's looking. I'm looking and I see like the cops, they don't follow us inside. They just stop. We go in and I'm like, that's strange. And I'm not kidding you. The bus pulls up. I see some fans and the bus door opens. I hear a whistle and I see a guy just pulls the mask down. And I was just like, holy crap. This is what? I was like, so my mindset is like, okay, dude, you got to protect yourself. This is where you're at now. And we get off the bus and, you know, scuffle here happens. So we're going through the locker room and, you know, they're breaking the windows. We're stuck in the locker room for like 2 hours, you know. Barjokas ends up leaving the team. And I'm sitting there like, babe, I don't know what I just got signed up for, but this is not it, you know? And we leave. Like, next day we come, you know, coach is gone, the assistant left. I'm just like, what is happening? I was like, what just happened? Like, I've never experienced nothing like that. So that's a crazy story.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because
that's a crazy story.
So on one hand, it's this great passion they have for the team. And on the other hand, it's this crazy place they can go with it. It's incredible.
Yeah. But I still love them to this day. I feel like they're like one of my favorite fans. Like, but that experience, I was just like, okay, you guys are taking basketball just too serious.
It's just a game.
Yeah, exactly.
You played with a couple of, I mean, just some of the greatest guards or point guards or ball handlers we've had in Europe in the last couple of years. And I just want to go through the names with you. I mean, obviously, when we talk about Olympiakos, we got to talk about Spanoulis. Man, this guy is like a folk hero, especially after Greece beat Team USA at the Olympics. But, I mean, this guy, he must have been one of your favorite point guards. I mean, he always got you the ball, right, after pick and roll.
Yeah, no, Spalunas is he's my guy. You know, that's a person to this day. I'll randomly just text him and see how he's doing, how's the family doing.
Yeah.
You know, I know we had a great connection, you know, basketball, but we actually had a great connection off the court as well. You know, just talk about family stuff and everything, man. He's a great guy. I was fortunate enough to play with him and just see some of that greatness he has. And just some of the stuff he taught me. I really appreciate it.
I was about to ask, is he the kind of point guard that really, you know, grabs you by the jersey and is like, look, if this and this happens, I want you to do this exactly and I'm going to get you the ball?
No. Yeah, only to the young guys. Only to the younger guys. Only to the younger guys. He didn't do that to me. I feel like it was kind of the opposite. And only reason I say opposite, because there are times where I had to tell him, you know, I need you to shoot the ball. If I'm sitting on your screen, you're open.
Yeah.
Shoot it. I know you want to put it down and then shoot. But the time I told him to do that, we got in some big trouble, I would say. After he did that. Yeah. The finals first year, played against Pana.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to run off the court because he shot it. When I told him to shoot it, he shot it off pick and roll. And he went like this to Pana fans. They said, they didn't like that. They didn't like that one.
I have to tell the fans, he just made this gesture that he held his hand up to his ear to you know, say like to the fans, hey, can't hear you. I guess that can inflame things.
Yeah.
Is he a crazy celebrity in Greece? I mean, I could imagine that he can't really go anywhere without people just mobbing him.
I feel like he is, but then I feel like he isn't. You know, he's so for the people. Like, we go to like normal coffee spots, you know, and like nobody bothers him. He sits there with his friends and, you know, drink coffee with his wife and just like a normal person. I feel like when you're on the road and stuff like that, that's when some, you know, kids want to, you know, see him more, you know. But other than that, I feel like he's just kind of relaxed.
Yeah, just one of my favorite Euro players. Sergio Llull, to talk about him, and I guess kind of a different point guard, you know, compared to Spanoulis, right?
Yeah, but he was always my favorite player in Europe, period. To this day, he's like the number one to me. And I say that because he had this flair to him, just like the swag, everything about him. When I first seen him, I was like, who is this guy? I was like, he's fast. Like, he's explosive. He can shoot the ball. And like, it's hard to block his shot. I thought he would just be throwing the ball up, you know, but playing with him, I noticed that he actually works on that shot that goes to the right, fading off high off the backboard. He works on that every day, you know? And I was just like, man, like I was in awe when I seen him play. I was like, I haven't seen a guy that explosive, you know what I mean? Who can handle the ball, get to where he needs to go, get his teammates involved in Europe, like that, like with his size and everything. I was like, yo, he's going to be a problem. He can be a problem. And I always wanted him to go to the league.
Yeah, he never wanted to. I mean, Houston kind of courted him for years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one, I don't know if you, I don't want to give people finances, but if you're making whatever, your home, your home, and you're playing for the best team, one of the best teams in Europe, I wouldn't want him to leave either. the NBA, who needs it at that point? You know what I mean? Like, you're home, you're having fun. You know, you don't want to up and leave, but, man, I feel like he would have been a problem in the NBA for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, Madrid, you know, who am I telling? Madrid is a pretty nice city to live in.
Yeah.
A little better than Houston, I would say. Nothing against Houston, but I like Madrid better. But obviously, you play with another guy who is in the NBA, who also played with you at Real. A guy, actually, I've watched you guys play, was it 2014 or 15? I can't remember. I mean, obviously, I talk about Luka Doncic. I mean, you played with him when he was really young. Did you see, or could you imagine what would happen along the way up until this day in his career?
We all did, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Anthony Randolph. We'll be sitting here talking, and Jeff Taylor sometimes, and say, I don't think he understands how good he is. Like if he doesn't let all the other, excuse my language, BS from basketball in the NBA, if he doesn't have that in his life, oh my goodness, he's going to be a problem if he stays focused. You know, I remember telling a scout, I was like, he said, Luka top five. I said, he should be one. And he kind of like laughed at me.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, I don't think so. So I said, I'm telling you, this kid's going to be great. That's all I'm saying. This kid's going to be great. First year, Luka kills everybody. Not one person. He kills everybody. He tears the league up. I get a phone call. You're right. And I was like, thank you. That's it. Like, the kid's good, you know, and it was a problem just for him being in Madrid the whole time, learning. And in EuroLeague, you know, everything's kind of closed, you know, the paint, spacing.
Yeah.
You get to the NBA, it's like, and I just know, I feel like we have this space, the goal went right with it, you know, and now he's unstoppable, man. He's unstoppable.
When I saw you guys play, he was still coming off the bench behind J.C. Carroll. And when he came in, I was like, the first thing that really shocked me about him, I think it was, 16, 17 at the time, whatever. I was like, how can this guy just come on to the court in the ACB and just feel like he's the best player there? You know, he was just, there's this confidence he displayed. I mean, that must have been crazy in practice with him. I mean,
practices were fun, man. Like, I remember playing against him in Olympiacos, and I was like, who's this young guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I found out who he was really quickly. I was like, he's going to be good.
Yeah.
And I said, he's 15. I said, what? I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. And then playing with him in practice, his competitive nature, I just see how he works. You know, he'll even talk smack to you and everything. Like, he had that confidence. He knew he was the guy. And you can tell he wanted to be the guy, because I think there was one game, Luka, don't be mad at me, but there was one game where, you know, it was tough on him. And I think, you know, he kind of broke down a little bit, you know, like he messed up, and you can see how much passion he had because he was so mad that he messed up. And you can tell he was going to be great just off the simple fact that, like, it meant that much to him, you know, not to mess up, not to, you know, I want to say lose a game, but not to, like, you know, give his all and, like, not be focused at that second, you know? And that's what happened. And you're just like, man, you're going to be good. If that kind of made you mad to that point, you're going to be really good, man. Like, seriously, you know, because you can just tell he has that passion and love for the game that I haven't seen that many people have.
And I think that's one aspect people totally forget when they talk about players and their talents and whatever. I mean, this whole thing, passion, love for the game, to me, that feeds everything. You know, it feeds your work ethic, you know, the way you care, the way you understand your craft, and with him, and obviously with you too. I mean, you wouldn't be here without the passion and love for the game. Everything else is just, it's maybe worth half, I think.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You got to think, when we all start to play this game, we don't play for money when we first start to play.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we're actually playing because we actually love to do it. And then the money comes in, and then, like, the other opportunities or business ventures come in, and then all these other things come in, you know. But once you realize, like, what you started for, and you keep that, everything else that comes is just like a bonus, you know. So that's how I take it.
Let's talk about one more thing, and as far as EuroLeague is concerned, You won the EuroLeague in 2019.
Yeah.
Take me through that season. Obviously, you play in Moscow, and there's, I guess, there's a lot of pressure on you guys to win, and then you finally come through. How is it winning this Euro crown for a club like Moscow?
Okay, I'll take you back to the year before for a split second. Yeah. The year before, we felt like we should have won too. You know, that was the whole goal with that team. We could have won that year. Obviously, we lose Zagreus. You know, they made a run at the perfect time, and there's nothing we can do. You know, so then we fast forward to the next year, and you know, Andrea literally said, "Hey, man, you guys gotta win. We're here to win." Guys who here won. You get the big bucks and all this thing. Now you got to deliver. Point blank, that was it. So our mindset was just win, period. And that was like a rough year, man, because I feel like the joy of the game got sucked out of that meeting, you know? Kind of like, we got to win, which we know we needed to win. But to say, you know, talking about like contracts and all this stuff at the beginning of the year, like nobody really wanted to hear that. We just wanted to hoop, but it was fun because all our practices were competitive. You know, we talk smack to each other. Coaches would be laughing. Guys would be laughing. You know, we had some moments, some good moments, some bad moments, you know, but it was just that journey was crazy. It was just so fun, you know, and then to hold the trophy up, to say we won, but I'm still kind of like stuck in the moment. And it was like my celebration came a little bit later and my mindset was, oh, I want to win another one. That was it. Like, it wasn't even like, oh my goodness, I just won. This is this. It was literally, I want to win another one. Wow. Like next year. Like, I want to get another one next year. And my wife tells me now, she's like, you haven't even enjoyed the moment. Like, yeah. Like, you haven't even sat back and was like, what you done? Like, you actually won. Like, I was like, yeah, because I want another one. She tells me you need to take a step back. You know, it's gonna go by so fast and you're not even gonna know it. So yeah, that was a great one though.
I wonder, is that something that's always the case with you when something good happens that you're just like, all right, that's good, but I gotta keep going? Or was it just in this particular instance?
No, it's like I always wanted to win. When I first started playing basketball, my team, they won states 4 or 5 years in a row. My year, we lost. My senior year, we lost. And I scored the last 2 points. We lost by 4. I remember that day. You know, first, I was like, broke down. Then in junior college, we go. We get to state. We lose. Coach was like, don't cry. I was like, I'm not crying no more. Like, that don't do nothing for me. You know, so I lose. Go to Ohio State. What do? We lost. So in my back of my mind, I've been number two.
Yeah.
Number two's been two, just going. And I was like, I got to win. I have to win one. And when I, even when I just won a championship period, domestic, EuroLeague, when I won Olympiacos, I was like, ooh, that felt good. I want to win again. Next year, we won. Then going to Madrid, I want to win, but we lost. You know, I can just go down the line. Then we get to Cheska. We won everything except for the EuroLeague that year. Then we win everything the next year. And it's like, I won the big one. I have to win another one. I just don't want to just win one. I have to. You know, and that's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
It's like, I always feel like I have something to prove because I, you know, back then I used to look at the media stuff. I'm like, whoa, he played in the NBA. He shouldn't have been playing in the NBA. He's this kind of player. So I wanted to show people, like, you know what, at the end of the day, I don't care what you're saying, but thank you. Because all you do is just keep adding fuel to the fire. And I'll always have something to prove, no matter what. Wow. So that's just me.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's on one hand, it's a great way to look at things. On the other hand, I wonder, I mean, maybe I'm just this is the wrong place or a long time in this podcast to ask this, but, I mean, do you think you can kind of, you know, take this and apply it to your next phase of your life after basketball? Because, you know, obviously in basketball, it's easy to win and get another one. But once basketball is gone, Do you feel it's going to be easy to find these goals to win?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a competitive nature because me, I think, like, I'm very competitive. So in anything you do, like, say, because I love business, you know, I love music. Mm. And it's like, I want to win. Like, even when I'm investing in companies or trying to start businesses with friends and stuff, like, I feel like to be the best, I'm going to have to work my butt off, meaning I'm going to have to study. I'm going to have to learn. Every day I have to learn something new. You know, you might not want to, but if I'm sitting back, I don't want my daughter to say, hey, dad, you play basketball, but what are you doing now? And I'm just sitting around, you know, I don't want her to feel like, oh, my dad made some money, so he just sits down. No, like I want to do other things. So I want to be great in those things as well. You know, so at the end of the day, I feel like that competitive nature is there, you know, even if I don't win, you know, or I didn't invest in the right company or something. I just learned something new about that company. I just learned something different, you know, so I can use that as a positive as well. So,
maybe that's a good segue to the last part of our podcast about talking about music and what you do off the court. I think music has been a big part of your life early on, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I love music. I mean, music since I was a kid. You know, I grew up in an African household. So my mom and dad, you know, they used to have parties, have their friends over. You know, we go to family houses and it's dance parties. They have the African music on and people are dancing. Whoa. People are dancing. You know, so I used to hear music. I used to love it. I was like, man, those sounds and everything. And then sometimes me and my sister would just be in the room and listen to the radio. I was like, whoa, that's cool. Like, you know, like come on, our own songs. And I think I really fell in love. I was in fifth grade. My sister came home and she has this case. And I'm like, what is this? I'm curious. So I'm like, ooh, let me open this up. So I opened it up and it's a viola.
Oh.
And yeah, it's a viola. And I'm like, I'm messing around. She comes in the rooms and sees me. Don't touch that. It's like, okay. Big sister said, don't touch it. Play it. From that day on, I fell in love with that. And I was just like, oh, big sister play this. I'm going to play this one day. The next thing you know, I played it for 7 years. And
oh, wow.
Loved it at that point. Yeah.
Are you still playing? Or is that just
I haven't played since I haven't played since I started taking basketball serious.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. But you can still catch me when I listen to music. I'm always like moving my fingers when I hear certain notes and stuff. Like, so it's still there. I think I may pick it up this summer.
You might need a bigger viola, right?
No, only thing I was worrying about was my pinky since it's a little jacked up right now. That's it. Yeah, to reach the certain notes. That's it.
So from what I understand, you have this this agency that kind of has some artists that you guys promote. Talk about that.
Yeah, so me and my cousin and his friend, we started it's called Life Entertainment. It's management. And it all started because my cousin wanted to do music. And, you know, I was like, all right, cool. I'll put some money in. I'll let you know what I mean? This is your dream. Come on, let's do it, you know? But that took me a while. But I seen some of these friends he was with, you know, at his grad party. And one girl kind of stood out. I was like, who is that? You know? Her style was totally different from everybody. And he goes, that's Bia. I was like, oh, wow. You know, he's like, yeah, she's with Pharrell and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So we go to the party and everything. We all talk. And then he, you know, eventually moves to LA, him and his friends. And he was like, you know what? I don't want to do the music thing no more. I don't want to be an artist. I was like, why? He was just like, I don't. He was like, I think we should be executives. I was like, what? I said, you went from this to this. That's, fill me in here, right? But at that time, he started to work with Steve Rifkin, you know, the one who kind of discovered Wu-Tang.
Oh, okay.
So he started working with him and at this place called Wave. And next thing you know, It's like, dude, I can do this. We can do this. If a couple of people I've been around so far and I see how the business goes, we can do it. I'm like, all right, man. So I put some money into it. And pretty much now, like, the rest is history. We're just trying to keep building up and eventually start a label.
Well, do you see parallels in, like, managing a career like yourself, you know, a basketball, a sports career, and a music career, or is it totally different?
Well, I'll say it's different because in basketball, it's like, you know what you're going to get. You know what I mean? Like, well, no, take it back. It's kind of the same because, you know, you can have endorsements for basketball. You can have endorsements for music, but, you know, some get pub deal. It's kind of difficult because some gets pub deal. Some get distribution. Some just signs to a label. It's like all this other stuff. And I'm like, on basketball, I sign this. I know this is what I'm getting. I know what's paid for. I know, like, insurance, all these things. The music, it's like, you know, they get this. I can write this off. They get an advance. I can write that off. So technically, they can sign for $1 million. But they got to recoup that million. The label has to recoup that million first before they start making, like, getting the green and stuff. So it's a lot. It's a lot to it.
Do you feel let me start the other way. Do you know Holger Geschwindner, the guy who, like, kind of like the mentor of Dirk Nowitzki?
The one who taught him.
Yeah, how to shoot. Whatever. Okay. This old crazy guy. He has this one saying, which was always stuck with me, because he was into jazz a lot when he was young, and he met an American who played, like, in the 70s in Germany. He told him, "Look, man, basketball is just like jazz. You know, it's just like, in its purest form, it's five people, just like a jazz combo. They're kind of riffing off each other, you know, playing with each other. And then no real rules. No, in its purest form, it's just people playing together. And it all makes sense." Is that something that makes sense to you? Is there a comparison between jazz and basketball?
I never looked at it that way, but I can see what he's saying. Like, I never really thought about that.
Okay.
But for sure. I mean, if you look at basketball, when it's kind of like, when you're holding someone's back, when you're holding them back and not letting them be themselves, you don't get the purest form of them, as you're saying. But when you let guys play, you can kind of see it, you know, like, we can all mesh perfectly. It's like everybody's kind of synced, even though sometimes it looks like chaos. It's like organized chaos because you know how to flow with the next person. So I definitely can see that for sure. Definitely.
Do you feel like basketball music is more, you know, intertwined in the States as opposed to over here? Because obviously there's this big hip hop basketball connection, which might not be as present in Europe.
Yeah, I feel like it's so funny. As you're saying, America, every athlete wants to be a rapper. Every rapper wants to be an athlete, you know? But I feel like that, I mean, I guess the music just touches us, you know, because how we grew up, you know, some grew up in worse places than some, but some people can relate to a lot of music, you know? And I won't say it's just, just hip hop. I say music in general, you know, it's all about how you feel. And some people definitely feel like, I feel like for me, I need music to play. Like, I need to hear music. You know, I need to hear something that's going to get me going, you know? And then again, it's like, you're going to need that, something to calm you down as well. And I feel like in sports, like, everyone needs those things.
Is there an artist, maybe even someone you listen to a lot, where you feel, yeah, man, that guy is the Othello Hunter of music? He works hard, you know, he's kind of a blue collar guy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I listen to everybody, you know, like, it's, everyone knows Lil Wayne and Eminem are my favorite rappers.
Oh, really?
Okay. So 99.9% I'm listening to those guys, you know, I want to listen to those guys. Other than that, I'll probably listen to some of my artists and some new stuff that comes out, you know, give everybody a chance, but mainly Eminem and Lil Wayne, I'm an artist.
What's your favorite Eminem and Lil Wayne track?
All of them, to be honest with you. I don't have, there's not one that I don't like. When I grew up on Eminem, I was listening to Criminal for some reason was my favorite. Wayne, Go DJ, Fireman was always something that I just had to listen to those tracks. It's a really, you know, because his first album that came out, I was just like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah.
There's two more things I have to touch before we get to the BayWa questions of our main sponsor. One is NFTs. I mean, that's all I see on your Twitter feed is NFTs. What's that all about?
Yeah. Man, I tell you, I went down the rabbit hole.
You did?
I went far down the rabbit hole. So, you know, I want to say it was Nick. Yes. Nick tells me about NFTs. But before that, it was our friend DJ Strawberry and Liz Strawberry. They were like, NFTs, and they're trying to explain to me. I was just like, okay. So one day in the locker room, Nick's telling me about NFTs. It's like, oh, you gotta go to OpenSea, you gotta get a MetaMask wallet, you gotta do all these things, you gotta do Ethereum. So I'm over here. I was already buying crypto at that time. I already had some Ethereum, but I didn't know you gotta use this to buy this and this, this. So I'm looking and I'm just like, wow, okay. How much is that? But then I realized, oh, you're buying JPEGs. But then I start buying utilities and start buying tokens. Now it's just like, sometimes I flip, you know, NFTs. Sometimes I'm holding what I actually like. But I feel like at the end, it's just to give my daughter, you know, she grows up, she'll have those things because I feel like that's the future, you know, so she can have those things. But right now it's just NFTs. I'm really into it now.
To me, I had to read up on it. I mean, not because I saw it in your tweet Twitter timeline, but because I was just interested in it. To me, it's just basically, well, it's trading cards with with digital. I mean, it's basically what it is, right? I mean, you just collect these things.
You can say that. You have collectibles, you have art, you know, like there. You have art, you have collectibles, like you said, you have profile pictures, you know, you have play to earn, you know, you have games. But yeah, man, I think it's a wave that's happening right now. You know, there's a lot of scams going on, clearly. You know, you just have to be smart, man. Like I follow a couple of people who I kind of, you know, do my research on and kind of trust in the information they give. You know, and, you know, I talk to Nick, we talk about NFTs like almost every other day, whenever we start to talk, you know, he's in the gym. But yeah, it's just, I feel like it's just another form of, like you said, trading cards, collectibles, all those things. But, you know, like Bored Ape Yacht Club, for instance, like, you know, you get invited to all these things, exclusive things. So I think that's what people like now. It's going to be a new form of, like, I feel like to get in events and all those things, it's going to be like a new way.
So are you going to get
an actual ticket?
Yeah. So are you going to get some of the FC Bayern basketball NFTs which are coming out? I think Bayern is the first EuroLeague team doesn't doing that. So that might be a good investment.
They're going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. This week, I think. You don't know that?
No. No one told me.
Oh,
but
man.
I will definitely get a Bayern NFT. Look at that.
That is unbelievable. They have their own NFT expert.
Now they show me. now they show me. Look at this.
There you go.
Look at this. You know?
Okay, last thing before we get to the BayWa questions, and this is very personal for me because I do this every night. Are you still on Call of Duty Warzone, or is there no time for you to play right now?
Man, I haven't. Ever since I had my daughter and she's like very active, I haven't played. I don't play around her. If she's at the house or if she's, I won't play. But I missed a game. Like, I really do miss it. I just haven't played in a long time. Like, it's sitting there. It's collecting dust. But, you know, like, maybe another long trip, I may bring it. But, yeah, I haven't played in a long time.
Yeah, man, that's the only, during the whole of COVID, that was my own, the only way to actually communicate with my buddies. It's just like starting up the game at night and then just going to Verdansk and Caldera and just playing. So, all right, so I don't ask you about your favorite loadout or whatever, or your KD. Let's go to the BayWa questions we have here. And these are always like questions from the sponsor, obviously. And the first one is, who has the best taste in music on the squad, and who would you never pass the aux cable to?
Ooh, right now we have Jason George controlling the music.
Oh, the young guy.
But I definitely, because he's a young guy, he has to, you know, he needs responsibilities.
Okay.
And he needs to start bringing soap on the road too.
So something else. All right.
Yeah. So, his playlist is okay, but it doesn't mix with everybody in the locker room. Mm. You know, I mean, I like hip hop, but that doesn't mean everybody wants to listen to hip hop all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like sometimes you can mix it up. It's like Nick has a good playlist. I think Corey, Nick, me, I haven't heard anybody else's playlist. So I'll say the best is us three.
So who's the worst?
Me, Corey, and Nick. Oh, I'm sick myself.
Not the best. Who's the worst? Who's the worst? Who would you never pass the aux cable to?
Right now, I don't want Jason George to have the aux cord.
Okay.
So we'll say Jason George.
All right. So the second one is, with which member of the team would you go to a music concert?
Music concert? What kind of music?
I don't know. It doesn't say. I guess something you like.
Okay, right now, D Hill for sure. Because D Hill.
Because you have the same taste.
Same taste.
Well, maybe
D Hill.
I'm just thinking. Maybe you should take one of the young guys, you know, to improve their taste. That might be a good thing. But
I mean, I would love to take. If that's the case. We can do Jason, but that wasn't a question.
That's
that
true.
Was not the
That's
question.
True. So here's the last one. Which song is essential for your pregame playlist?
That changes. That really does change. Sometimes I listen to a lot of Christian rap as well, depending on the day. Man, right. I can't say the song, but I can't tell you. It's all I'm going to say is it's, I'm going to say it as of now, what I've been kind of listening to. I'm going to say Bia. And there's an artist out there that she did a record with, and I'm loving it. And I think the world's going to love it, but nobody else has heard it, but maybe 5 or 6 people. You know, and when the world hears it, they're going to be like, oh yeah. So I just can't, I'm going to say be it, and I'm just going to leave it like that. And I'm going to let the world, you know, just wait to hear it.
So maybe you should go to the arena DJ and hook him up so the people in the Audi Dome can hear it as well.
That's going to take some phone calls, talking to the
some
lady.
Clearance.
Some clearance, exactly. For sure. Don't want to have a spoiler alert here.
All right.
But people can be very surprised.
Othello, man, that was great. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I hope you're still holding up during this crazy part of the schedule. And man, good luck for the rest of the season, man. It was great.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Das war sie, die 13. Folge der zweiten Staffel von Open Court powered by BayWa. Wir hoffen, dass dieser Podcast gefallen hat und wir uns im Audidome bei Music Meets Basketball sehen. Lasst uns gerne eine Rezension da, zum Beispiel Apple Music und Spotify, empfehlt den Podcast weiter und falls ihr euch ein bestimmtes Thema oder Gesprächspartner wünscht, ihr wisst das, schickt uns gerne eure Anregung an opencourt@fcbayern.com. Vielen Dank für eure Zeit und bis zum nächsten Mal.